Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on the Arcata fire cleanup, plant tags used by cannabis growers containing surprising substances, and this week's sports report. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from Humboldt County. The Humboldt County Department of Aviation, in collaboration with the Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association and the Arcata Fire District, will conduct a prescribed burn of the grass at the California Redwood Coast Humboldt County Airport, located at 3561 Boeing Avenue in McKinleyville, in order to prepare for the upcoming Rumble Over the Redwoods air show. The prescribed burn will help mitigate any potential risks when pyrotechnics are displayed during the air show. This work will also help with smoke management, aircraft, and firefighter safety at the event. The project will occur during optimal weather conditions and is anticipated to take place sometime between Saturday, August 1st and Tuesday, August 4th. During the prescribed burn, airport visitors and those in the vicinity of ACV should expect to see fire in a controlled area on airport property, and personnel maintaining and putting out the fire. The fire may be visible from surrounding roads, homes, or by air. Please plan accordingly. There are no planned street closures, and airport operations will not be impacted as a result of the prescribed burn. Next is news from the Redway Community Services District. Beginning in August, the Redway Community Services District will begin its annual program of locating, testing, and exercising mainline valves, feeder line valves, and fire hydrant valves throughout the district's water distribution system. This preventative maintenance program is essential to ensuring that water systems remain safe, reliable, and prepared for routine maintenance, as well as emergency situations. Properly functioning valves allow RCSD crews to quickly isolate sections of the water system during water main breaks, repairs, and other emergencies, minimizing service interruptions and protecting water quality. Valves that are not routinely exercised can become inoperable due to corrosion, mineral buildup, or age. Dysfunctional valves can significantly delay emergency repairs, increase the number of customers affected by water outages, and make routine maintenance more difficult and costly. During this work, customers in the vicinity of valve testing may experience temporary fluctuations in water pressure, brief periods of turbid water, and short-duration interruptions in water service. Although the water may temporarily appear discolored due to naturally occurring mineral sediment being disturbed within the water mains, it remains safe for normal household use. If discoloration occurs, running the cold water tap for several minutes will typically restore water quality. If you have questions, please contact the Redway Community Services District at 707-923-3101. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. It's been 7 months since fire tore through half a city block in downtown Arcata, destroying several longtime businesses and the apartments above them. Cleanup crews are finally on site this week, but for at least one former resident, the fallout isn't over. Ryan Hudson has the story.
On January 2nd, a fire tore through half of a city block in downtown Arcata, destroying several businesses and apartments above them. 7 months later, cleanup is finally underway, a process complicated by permits, hazardous material testing, and the toll it's taken on the people who called that block home. One of the displaced residents was on site observing the cleanup work, hoping to recover anything from her shop or from her former apartment.
My business burned down, but bills, they don't burn out, you know.
Yeah.
Like responsibilities, they don't burn out. I had to change like 5 different locations since the fire, because I lost my home too. My boyfriend, he still lives in the car. Actually, I was asking him to like do open another GoFundMe, maybe he can get help, but he was kind of like shy to ask help. Yeah, I live in the car too, and I feel like the place I have for just like temporary. I'm like, I don't have like, you know, solid life right now.
The company handling the cleanup is Mayfield Environmental Solutions, a California hazmat and demolition contractor. President and CEO James Mayfield says the delay comes down to one thing: doing it right.
Hi there, I'm James Mayfield. I'm the president of Mayfield Environmental Engineering. We are partnering with Environmental Remedies Incorporated to oversee the cleanup. And so we're tag teaming off of each other to do a combination of cleanup, demolition, debris removal, and environmental due diligence. So we've done extensive sampling before, during, and after the cleanup to check for things like asbestos, VOCs, heavy metals, all kinds of things to make sure, number one, that we're not exposing our workers to undue risk, particulates in the air, also the community, of course, and making sure that we profile where our waste is going at proper landfills so that it's a legal, regulated disposal process. And the reason we're here, we're a hazmat contractor, is because most people who do disaster response are paving contractors or general contractors. They have no idea about chemistry or hazmat. We are a hazmat company, and that's why we bring those chemical experiences and backgrounds to do the job more comprehensively.
Okay.
And if you run into hazmat or explosives or who knows what you find, we can handle it.
Yeah.
Another contractor would hide it and then call someone else and take credit for it. That happens all the time.
Okay. Yeah.
Mayfield explained the testing process and where most of this debris will land eventually.
Almost all of it's going to Dry Creek Landfill in Oregon. That's a regulated proper landfill, and then they require substantial documentation up front to show no asbestos. They need asbestos for hazmat contractors to provide a cover letter to interpret that data so that it's not just numbers. You know, we got to have some kind of assessment that this is genuine interpretation.
Sure.
But the main reason it's going to Oregon, it's not like we're taking it somewhere else where nobody regulates it. It's because there's so much material, it's more efficient to just bring massive trailers and haul it out.
And that's what we're looking at behind you here.
Yeah.
Mayfield drew a comparison to the Palisades fire that they had also responded to for cleanup.
Yeah, so as I said previously, we demolished over 300 properties in the Pacific Palisades and Eaton fire, and we tested over 3,000 properties for all kinds of concentrations of lead or furans, dioxin, PCBs. So we know very well that anytime you have a fire, you really don't know what the hell you're running into.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do the maximum due diligence of testing before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
But as you clear debris, you don't know what you're going to hit that a previous homeowner or tenant left there. Propane
right.
tanks, gasoline, paint cans, you just don't know. So
yeah.
There's an abundance of caution.
Yeah.
And that's why the jobs are so slow. Got to make sure you're doing it carefully. You don't have things blowing up,
mm-hmm.
hurting your men, or spreading contaminants.
Yeah, and yesterday there were some propane tanks uncovered, and of course you're dealing with the remnants of a paint store and a hardware store,
yeah,
right? So does that further complicate it?
The hardware store and all the other tenants have been very wonderful and transparent to the maximum information they have, saying this is what inventory we had, so we've been communicating very thoroughly,
okay.
So we're not just smashing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we found some propane tanks saying, whoa, stop the job, move that to the side.
Right.
We have fire extinguishers proximal in every tractor to make sure that we're ready to go if anything bad happens.
Yeah.
Other challenges. Yeah, so yesterday we had, this is hours after our work was done, we had a fire on the boundary of the job site. That appears to be like some of the straw wattle. Those are the buoys we place around the perimeter to capture any potential water running off site to protect the stormwater system.
Yeah.
It seems like an unhoused person may have thrown a cigarette and it ignited. We don't know, but fire department came out, abundance of caution. PG&E came out to, of course, absolve themselves, as they should. And I don't personally know exactly what the heck happened. But again, we have two water buggies on site spraying water constantly.
Yeah.
And fire extinguishers everywhere. So as far as causes of fires or what originally happened, I don't personally know anything. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Love to find out.
Sure.
In any demolition project, if you're doing your due diligence, you need to spray water on it to suppress the dust. Any asbestos risk, you absolutely need to spray water on it to keep any potential particles down. Even though, as we already established, there is no known asbestos in the air, I tell people, and I've handed out papers to everyone in the community adjacent to this area, saying, I recommend you keep your windows shut, your doors closed. That doesn't mean there's toxic crap blowing in the air, but as you know, in California, silica, it's just dust. That's considered a respiratory hazard. So
right.
I just don't want this stuff blowing anywhere.
Right.
Therefore, we spray water constantly no matter what. So we've, like I said, we've done many, many fires, hundreds of properties. My partners did Campfire, Paradise Fire, so we know that fires can emit all kinds of combustion byproducts. They can. The proper answer to your question is, with the data we have provided, there is no known toxics going in the air from everything we've sampled as of today. And again, we're still sampling, so when this video goes live, things could change tomorrow. That's why we're on top of it.
Gotcha.
Burnt wood has a burnt smell to it. That is not inherently toxic, and we have no proof of that. The middle of the property does have fire debris. So as we move the non-burnt material to load with our first shipments, you know, we're consolidating burnt material inside.
Okay.
And then we spray the hell out of the dust that goes airborne. So that has a burnt smell, but that's not inherently toxic.
So that's what I was smelling. It's just the burn char.
To the maximum degree of information we have.
Yeah, I think that is what it smells like.
There are misconceptions that smoke is toxic. Smoke is nothing. It's the potential gases or furans, dioxins, PCBs, formaldehydes, chemical byproduct constituents therein that are toxic. And again, we have no data to back up that it's toxic. So smoke itself is not the end of the world inherently.
Right.
It's been different in the sense that we have a very welcoming community. It sounds like what everyone wants to hear, but it's true. I mean, we're from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, I love my home, but it's night and day here.
Right.
People are coming out asking how they can help.
Yeah.
They're telling us their memories of different kinds of businesses that have been here. So these are some things you might run into. That's been hugely helpful.
Yeah.
The city is literally standing around making calls to help me make sure I do my job better.
Mm-hmm.
That's night and day. That's
really
how it's been easier. It's easier in the sense that the property is less contaminated than I expected from my experience. You know, in the Palisades, you run into all kinds of things. Electric vehicles are an absolute mess when they're burned.
Okay.
You have molybdenum, antimony. It's worse than lead. That's all over past Palisades, and the Army did an atrocious job cleaning it up.
Right.
I don't have any of those issues here, so that's really reassuring. I love that it's wet and moist here, so that helps keep the dust down. That's been very helpful.
As for when it will be done, Mayfield estimated that the debris will be gone within 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Can you give us a time frame on completion?
Okay, so we have very large 120 cubic yard trucks that are transported to Oregon. Again, we're not able to work as fast as we want to because we got to keep spraying dust and cleaning up the mess. As you can see, there's no debris spills over the side, but we've got the whole road blocked off to make sure no tires are punctured and make sure it's all contained. As soon as it's done, we run in, we sweep it up, we clean it up, use a little bit of water, but we don't want too much because we don't want it flowing into the storm drains, you know? So it's a delicate process.
Yeah.
For that reason, I don't want to promise some timeline. But you should see this, you should see vast majority of the debris cleared by mid-next week. Today's Friday, so we're working tomorrow, although we have a fair, I think, happening blocking some of the streets. So
well, it's Arcata. It's summertime.
I love it. So we're, you know, originally people said 6 to 8 weeks. That's because you just never know what you're going to run into. But within 2 weeks, you're going to see significant clearing.
Okay.
Then the property owners might want us to come back and remove foundations, remove dirt so that they can rebuild. So the process can continue in many phases. No, I just think transparency is the best thing. I mean, situations like this, people get scared for their health and safety, and the Mayan races, and you got ChatGPT. So any questions, reach out. You know, we have nothing to hide.
For now, the block sits behind fencing and caution tape while the cleanup process and abatement continues. A slow motion process for a fire that changed things in an instant. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Ryan Hudson.
Viral social media posts have declared that plant tags used by California cannabis growers contain lead, arsenic, and BPA. We spoke with the grower behind the initial testing to learn more, KMUD News reports. Last year, Jeff Nordahl of Santa Cruz-based Jade Nectar and Jade Grow Farm decided on a hunch to test metric tags that are required to be placed on individual cannabis plants for California Department of Cannabis Control licensees. Metric is the compliance tracking system and software required to be used by cannabis growers in the legal California marketplace. Jeff tested brand new metric tags at the same labs that test cannabis for growers, and both labs he used have ISO certification. The tags have been in the news lately due to the DCC considering moving to batch tagging instead of individual tags. And Jeff's social media posts have gone viral among cannabis growers. Jeff's testing has found that metric tags contain lead, arsenic, and BPA, albeit all in relatively small amounts, but enough to fail a test under the parameters set for commercial cannabis in the DCC system. He also states that the tags are often greasy, especially in sunlight, an observation that has been corroborated by other growers. KMUD News spoke with Jeff Nordahl today, Friday, July 31st. He first describes the initial testing process and trying to get the word out on metric tags testing positive for lead, arsenic, and BPA.
So I sent him tags, brand new tags, just right out of the box, not from the field. So no cross-contamination or anything. So I sent him the fresh tags, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then 2 weeks later, he contacted me and said, oh my God, these actually tested positive for lead, arsenic, and then did some follow-up testing with another lab that actually tested positive for BPA. And those are three Prop 65 chemicals. So anyway, we just saw they were there, and immediately soon after that, in November, there was a cannabis advisory committee meeting. It's kind of like a hearing, but where the public can make comments. So I decided I wasn't trying to do a gotcha moment or, you know, catch the DCC off guard. But DCC is very difficult to engage with or communicate with. There's no real formula for how to communicate with them, or if you send an email, they don't get back to you. So during this cannabis advisory committee meeting, I just, during public comments, said I tested these tags. They tested positive for lead, arsenic, and BPA. I think this could be concerning.
Unfortunately, the DCC did not initially respond to Jeff's reports and even stated that the tests were likely due to field contamination, which is unlikely for brand new tags. Jeff spoke on the impact of just how many potentially contaminated tags are in the DCC licensing system, including for those handling the tags themselves.
And I also had been thinking about, you know, farm workers who are handling like thousands and thousands of these tags. And then you start imagining like a pregnant woman handling these. And it just kind of was not a panic, but I'm like, I think the public deserves to know. Here's a very real scenario. If you're tying 500 tags a day, you have to prep a twist tie, have the tag. It's entirely possible someone puts the tag in their mouth, gets the twist tie ready, then puts it, just like a carpenter puts nails in their mouth.
Jeff Nordahl of Jade Nectar also spoke on unclear proper practices for the disposal of metric tags for cannabis plants, and a lack of DCC knowledge on proper disposal.
Right now, metric and DCC do not even know what waste category the tags fall into in California. Are they e-waste? Are they universal waste? Are they common trash? I actually have it in writing from metric, where metric support told me to recycle the tags. That's actually totally wrong information. They're not recyclable in California. They're not eligible for being recycled. And then, so they ended up having to change that because I actually posted the metric customer support person in writing telling me to recycle them. That's totally wrong information. But I did get an email from DCC saying they're now contacting Cal Recycling and Department of Toxic Substance Control to figure out what waste category the tags are in. And then once they figure out what waste category they're in, then they can provide guidance on proper disposal. But they even said in the email that they may, depending on that study, they may have to set up take-back centers.
Lastly, Jeff spoke on the irony of the state of California, with its famously strict environmental regulations, creating so much non-recyclable waste.
And then the irony is, like, Rob Bonta, the attorney general right now, is suing plastic bag and straw companies over plastic waste. So they're suing, they're banning and suing these plastic companies for bags and straws. Meanwhile, the same California government is paying Metric $28 million a year to import in massive amounts of non-recyclable, non-reusable, potential e-waste plastic tags. And the same government hasn't even thought to set up proper disposal guidelines.
9 months since Jeff Nordahl's original tests on metric tags that tested positive for lead, arsenic, and BPA, the DCC is finally starting to pay attention. We'll have to see what steps the Department of Cannabis Control takes on instructing growers on proper disposal, and if any changes are made to the manufacturing process for metric tags. KMUD News reached out to the DCC on this story, but did not hear back in time for comment. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
The Humboldt Crabs will close out the 2026 summer baseball season this weekend as local sports fans begin to turn their attention to the upcoming fall sports season and the return of high school and college football. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Crabs and what was a somewhat disappointing weekend for the team in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including how the last remaining Humboldt County Little League All-Star team fared at the NorCal State Tournament, the latest American Legion baseball news, some Ute softball news, and why it was a big weekend in local motorsports. But first up, the summer baseball season comes to an end this weekend as the Humboldt Crabs prepare for one final weekend series. Last weekend, the Crabs saw any hopes of qualifying for the 2026 Pacific Empire League Championship Series end after taking two of three games against the Medford Rogues. The Crabs went into the final weekend of league play needing help to qualify for this week's league-deciding series, but it wasn't to be for the local collegiate summer baseball club. The Crabs opened the weekend with a 12-5 win over the Rogues at the Arcata Ballpark on Friday night, but would drop Game 2 of the series the following night by a score of 10-5. They would bounce back to take the series rubber match on Sunday afternoon, winning 6-4. However, that wasn't enough to advance to a second straight PEL Championship Series. The Lincoln Potters closed out league play strong to advance to face the Healdsburg Prune Packers for the league title. Medford finished third in the league standings, followed by the Crabs in fourth. The Crabs closed out league play with a record of 13-12. They continued their season this week, hosting the Chico Lone Wolves in a pair of games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and they took both games by scores of 10-3 and 13-3. Three local pitchers featured on the mound in Wednesday's win, including McKinleyville High School's Joe Tano, who got his first start for the Crabs. Former Arcata Tigers Miles Oliver and Cedar Klein both also featured in relief, with Oliver getting the win. Oliver threw five scoreless innings and gave up just one hit and no walks and struck out three. With the two wins, the Crabs improved to 37-13. They will close out the 2026 summer season with a three-game series against the Placer County Peloteros this weekend, with Game 1 set for Friday night, followed by a Saturday night showdown and the season finale on Sunday afternoon, with first pitch set for 12:30 p.m. Switching gears, the local Little League season officially ended last weekend when the last remaining Humboldt County All-Star squad bowed out of their NorCal State Tournament. Fresh off their district and section tournament championships, the Eel River 10-year-old All-Stars traveled to Fremont to play some of the best young teams in the northern half of the state. However, at this stage of the season, there are no easy matchups, and the county champs would drop two straight games to end an impressive campaign. They opened with a 16-1 loss to Twin Cities out of Larkspur on Saturday, before falling 14-0 to Hollister the following day to close out the double elimination tournament. Despite the two losses, it was a memorable summer for the young Eel River players, who dropped just one game in their district and section tournaments combined. Earlier in the month, the Redwood Empire Little League 11-year-old and 12-year-old All-Stars saw their seasons end at their respective section tournaments. In American Legion baseball action, meanwhile, the Humboldt Eagles 17Us also saw their season end last weekend at the district tournament in Fairfield. The Young Eagles opened tournament play with a 6-4 loss to the Fairfield Expos before bouncing back with three straight wins. They beat the Siskiyous Spirits 8-4 and the All-Pro Navy 8-0 before getting the better of the Solano Mudcats 17-10 on Saturday. However, multiple teams finished with a record of 3-1 in pool play, and the Eagles did not advance to the semi-finals after being eliminated in a tiebreaker. That ended the season for the local club, but it was another successful campaign for the team, which won its own tournament in Eureka earlier in the month. Switching gears, some local softball travel teams are in action at big tournaments this week. The newly formed Northwest Elite Softball are enjoying their first summer playing together and feature a pair of young teams at the 16U and 14U age groups. Club founder Daniel Osborne has 25 players from throughout the county on the two rosters, including girls from several different high school programs. Both teams will continue their summer seasons this week at the NAFA Nationals in Newburgh, Oregon, which got underway on Thursday. Another big tournament in Oregon, the Northwest Alliance Fast Pitch Tournament, is taking place in Medford and will feature a pair of local clubs, the newly formed Humboldt Smoke Fast Pitch 18Us and the Lost Coast Chaos 12Us. The Smoke is another countywide all-star team made up of players from two colleges and six of the nine HDNL programs. Most of the players on the 15-player roster played together 4 years ago, right before they began high school, as part of the Mad River Mist travel program, and they competed at a national tournament in Tennessee. This year, according to team coach Joe Brown, several of the players asked him if they could play together again for one more summer, and the team will debut at this week's tournament. Brown says they are planning on hosting a tournament at the Bear River Casino Sports Complex in mid-August, and are also hoping to host two more tournaments in the fall. In local motorsports, it was a big weekend at the Redwood Acres Raceway, and for one driver in particular. The local raceway hosted the third event of the 2026 season on Saturday night and featured a packed night of action, including the always popular NorCal Legend Series. It was an emotional night for Kyle Lavelle of Willits, who took the checkered flag in the main event for his first win in the series after coming close on several occasions. Racing returns to the local track on August 15th with fan appreciation night and a packed schedule that will feature the return of the late models division. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Ryan Hudson and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention, other stories we're missing, or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.